Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Jim, please promise me this one thing.
What is it?
When I'm gone, will you write a truthful biography of me? You know, include all the bad stuff, too.
Oh, damn. That's a lot of ground to cover. I better get to work on that now. What a great week this has been, Patrick.
Oh, it's been incredible, Jim. Mind expanding and definitely makes you want to go down a Zevon rabbit hole, which I think a lot of people will be doing. And as we said earlier in the week, if you're here for the first time because of the Zevon shows, number one, you want to say praise to Hunter Bennett for organizing this, motivating it and coming up with notes. But two, stick around for our podcast. I think you'll like it. We do this kind of deep dive stuff every now and then, and we talk about music. And if you like where we're coming from, I think you'll like our other topics too.
We talk about classic artists. We talk about new music. We are all over the place, right?
That's right.
Yeah. If I can give a impartial testimonial, I love you guys' podcast. It is how I discover new music, rediscover old music. That's how I even enjoy reminiscing about stuff I didn't like and still don't like. It's always entertaining. And you guys do a great job also of making it digestible by not having the episodes be too long. So that's a roundabout way of me apologizing for your preceding four episodes being too long.
No.
This one will be shorter, I promise.
Well, see, Hunter, you do something that I admire, which is that you really thoroughly prepare for your appearances. And you have a lot of facts that you go through. And we, Patrick and I, try to avoid facts as much as possible because that's usually what gets us in trouble. So
that's right. Facts are slippery, as somebody once said.
That's right.
But yeah, and if you come up with facts, you're inevitably going to get some wrong. Like, I'm sure I've made a bunch of factual errors. And I like to imagine that there's somebody out there in their house shaking their fist and being like, this moron is completely unqualified to have a Warren Zevon week.
I'm going to call in. Yes.
That's right. I'm going to dash off an angry letter.
That's right. That's right. Flaming arrow.
No, this is great. You've done a lot of great research and you know your stuff. And we can tell from your enthusiasm also that you are a big fan of this artist. And so that definitely shows through. All right. So anyway, the show is called Rockin' the Suburbs. We're in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., although Hunter is in the district proper. He's got a nice place there.
Yeah.
Sorry, we couldn't, you know, do this in person, but, you know, circumstances are what they are. So we should introduce ourselves. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And of course, you heard Hunter Bennett there. And how are we going to wrap this up? Where is episode 5 on the Warren Zevon week?
Well, episode 5 is titled The Wind and the Aftermath, which actually sounds very sort of like poetic and thoughtful. So hopefully we can live up to such a erudite title. So anyway, it's August of 2002. Warren Zevon is, as we mentioned last episode, working out like a fiend. He is really into Vin Diesel and has decided that he wants to get totally jacked. But he's totally short of breath. And, you know, he thinks it's the altitude because I think he first notices the problem in Colorado. But anyway, somebody tells him he should go see his doctor. And turns out Zevon, like my father, is deathly afraid of going to doctors. So he doesn't really have a doctor. So he goes to see Dr. Stan, who is his dentist, who apparently was the only medical professional that he was not too freaked out to see. So Dr. Stan convinces him that he needs to go see an actual non-dental doctor.
Right.
Zevon goes to see a doctor who tells him that he has mesothelioma and has months to live. And mesothelioma, as you probably know, if you ever watch daytime TV, is a disease that you typically get from being exposed to asbestos. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a mystery as to how Warren Zevon came down with it. Because, you know, I think as far as he knew, he wasn't exposed to asbestos. Mm-hmm. So he gets it. And, you know, he does an interesting thing. He decides, even though he's terminally ill, like, he's going to go for it. And so he tells his publicist, I'm terminally ill. I'm going to make a farewell record and I want you to milk this terminal illness for all that it's worth. Or I guess he told his manager that, not his publicist, though I'm sure the publicist got the directive as well. And so they went for it. You know, there's the famous Letterman appearance that we've talked about where he's the only guest for an hour on David Letterman. He plays three songs. VH1 starts following him around with a film crew. They make a documentary about him that's released shortly after he dies. And everybody is lining up to play on this last record. I mean, you got Springsteen, you got Emmylou Harris, you got the Eagles, you got Billy Bob Thornton, who apparently was Warren's neighbor at one point. Ry Cooter, John Waite of Ain't Missing You at All fame.
Wow.
Tommy Shaw from Styx. Tom Petty and Mike Campbell, T-Bone Burnett. So, you know, they're all making this record. And again, the VH1 documentary is definitely worth watching. You can sort of see it as it happens. There's a great clip in there where Springsteen comes in and plays just a great guitar solo.
Yeah.
And so The Wind comes out 2 weeks before Zevon dies. It's a huge hit. It's number 12 on the Billboard charts, number one on the Billboard indie charts, wins 2 Grammys. It's nominated for 3 others. I mean, the guy dying was the best thing that he ever did for his career, you know, sort of tragically. Like, all of a sudden, people finally start appreciating Warren Zevon. And it's all sort of comes about because he is terminally ill. And The Wind gets all this acclaim, but the record is really kind of a mess. Because, frankly, it's just got too many guest stars. It was recorded in a whirlwind. I think they even wrote the songs after he was diagnosed and recorded them all. So, you know, there's some real highlights on here, but also there's some stuff that's not good. But let's start off listening to Knockin' on Heaven's Door.
Mama, take this veg off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. And I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
I know that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the problem with it, is like, you know the song.
Right.
And It's been covered by a lot of people. And listening back to it, that's a really good version. It was apparently recorded in Billy Bob Thornton's home studio late at night. And, you know, there are a lot of sort of interesting facts around it. And again, it's like, it's a great version. And the bass playing and sound on that is great. But like, if you didn't know that the guy singing that was terminally ill, yeah, I'm not sure that you're going to go back to it. Because again, it's such a famous, well-known song, and there's so many versions of it out there. That's a good one, but I don't know that you come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
I totally get why he did it. It's a very good, well-played version. But again, like, it's a song that's so covered that it just,
yeah,
you know.
Agreed. Yeah. It's a little too on the nose, I think.
Yeah, for, it's an interesting
given
choice.
Given his, you know, normal sense of humor and wit and so on.
Yeah. So let's listen to another song off of this. Let's listen to Mem is a Statue, which I think this is a very successful song.
I'm numb as a statue. I may have to beg, borrow, or steal. So I can have some feelings too. I'm pale as a ghost. You know what I love about you. That's what I need the most. I'm gonna beg, borrow, or steal.
Death record, I think there's a pressure to make everything feel sort of so momentous and mean so much. And I think one of the reasons that I think Numb as a Statue really works is because it's not that. Like, I don't think it's about death or anything. It's just kind of a nice, like, rocking tune. There's only 4 guys on it. There's Jorge Calderon, Jim Keltner, and David Lindley. And it's not especially meaningful. The lyrics aren't all that remarkable, but I just like the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice little rocker, you know, that feels kind of compact and cool. And like you said, the circumstances surrounding it and everything else make it viewed through a lens that is unfair, I think, in some ways. But yeah, perfectly described.
Yeah.
Yes.
So on sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, let's listen to El Amor de Mi Vida, which I believe means the love of my life.
I close my eyes, you reappear. I always carry you inside in here. I fall asleep, you come to me. And once again, our love is real. How could I have let you get away? Why couldn't I have found a way to say, tú eres el amor de mi vida, si solo te pudiera encontrar con todo el corazón de mi vida, tú eres mi.
That's lovely.
Yeah, I feel like his voice sounds different, you know, undoubtedly because he's having a hard time breathing, but he sounds like Willie Nelson to my ears.
Yeah, really does.
So, yeah, that song apparently was about Annette Aguilar Ramos, who he dated for a while and apparently was the love of his life. It's a genuinely affecting song. I wouldn't rank it as one of his all-time sort of greats, but it fits in well on this record.
Yeah, for sure.
And again, you know, I think probably not coincidentally, there are no stars on this one, apart from Jim Keltner, the sort of celebrated studio guy.
Mm-hmm,
and
it's,
those are the songs that really work on this record. I should mention also, like, Jorge Calderon, the guy who I think going back to the first record has been a collaborator of Warren Zevon's and played on a lot of these songs. He is apparently the guy that really got this record made, you know, kept Warren going, kept people focused, got people into the studio. And he, I mean, again, the record's a little bit of a mess because of the circumstances and how many people wanted to play on it. But he did just a phenomenal job. And you can really hear it in these songs where it's just him on there. Like this next one we're going to listen to, which is the most famous song off this record. It's just Warren, Jorge Calderon, and Jim Keltner. And it's just an amazing song. So let's listen to Keep Me In Your Heart.
Shadows are falling and I'm running out of breath. Keep me in your heart for a while. If I leave you, it doesn't mean I love you any less. Keep me in your heart for a while. When you get up in the morning and you see that crazy sun, keep me in your heart for a while. There's a train leaving nightly called when all is said and done. Keep me in your heart for a while. Sha-la-la-la. For a while, sha la 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 la. Keep me in your heart for a while.
That's a crushing song.
Yeah, it really is.
Frankly, like, he could have just done that song, and that I think it would have been every bit as powerful as the rest of the record. I mean, it's just so great. And what's interesting, you know, you watch the VH1 documentary, and I think this was the last song that he sang on the record. And it was one, you get a sense of it from the book, that like Jorge Calderon, again, was like, you got to sing this song.
Yeah.
What's really interesting, you know, as we talked about a couple of days ago, Warren Zevon quit drinking in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he was diagnosed, he started again. But like, they don't touch upon that in the VH1 documentary. There's a really genuinely affecting scene where he's sitting on the couch. He's singing the words. I think his daughter's there. He's in his apartment singing the song. And what makes it sort of more remarkable, but what they didn't put in the documentary, is that he had gone on like a total bender, wasn't responding to anybody's calls. Yeah. And Jorge Calderon was the one that went by and sort of dragged him out of it and was like, you got to sing the song. And thank God he did, because it could be the greatest thing he's ever done.
I was just about to say, really, I mean, it's the perfect, you know, closing statement, right? For life and career. And for just about any artist, if you'd like just written that one song in your career, you'd be like,
oh my God,
I've done it, right? I've achieved something, right? It's just, it's really amazing. Having read your notes, Hunter, I know you have some thoughts on this. And I think I have similar thoughts, which is that the thing that really strikes me about the song, and I think really makes it work, is, again, it's Warren Zevon understanding something about the human condition in a way that maybe other writers don't quite get. The song is not, you know, love me for the rest of time, through eternity, so on and so forth. It's just for a while. You know, it's just that notion that, like, he understands that eventually the people in his life will move on and they won't think of him through eternity. They won't think of him all the time, but all he really hopes is that they just, you know, remember him for a while or have those good feelings about him, you know, kind of from time to time, right?
Yeah, like the thing about when you're doing simple things around the house, maybe think of me and smile. I mean, that's perfect.
Yep.
Yeah. Like,
yep.
Yep.
You know, my wife's sister died a couple of years ago, and it was really, you know, it's just incredibly sad. But the nice thing is, like, from time to time, I think about her and I smile.
Right.
And it always sort of makes me think of that song. And the thing that I find fascinating about this is, you know, he was, like we talked about, he made these death records and nobody paid attention. And then, you know, because we kind of like things to be obvious to the point where we're sort of hit over the head with them, you know, he makes The Wind and it is a true death record because he's dying and everybody loves it. And sort of adulation and sort of adoration and praise are heaped upon him. He's seen as a guy who's bravely battling death again, because, you know, in part they're obscuring the fact that he started drinking again. And so he just seems like a guy who's dealing with death in sort of a more sort of mature, removed way than the rest of us would. And he, being Warren Zevon, is so profoundly uncomfortable with it. And, you know, he's got that self-loathing streak. So what does he do? On his deathbed, apparently he asks his ex-wife, Crystal, to write a book. He made a promise that she would write the book about him, and he made a promise that she would put in all the bad stuff.
Right.
And she did. And it's, like I said, when I first read the book, I was so excited for it to come out. And it came out, I think, in maybe 2007. And I remember I went and bought it at Olson's in DuPont Circle. I was like practically shaking. I was so excited to read it. And I hated it because it was like I had created this sort of person in my mind that was not at all what Warren Zevon was. He was, like so many of us, a very flawed person, and in some respects, even more flawed than I think a lot of us are. But when I went back and reread it in preparing to do this week of shows, I liked it a lot more. And I mean, first of all, Crystal Zevon did such a great job. She interviewed everybody.
Yeah.
She got the quotes. She put it together so well. It is one of the great rock and roll books.
It really is.
And I would recommend that everybody read it if you're at all interested in Warren Zevon, or even if you aren't, if you just are interested in like reading a really well-constructed oral history of somebody that was a very complicated person.
Yeah. It's harrowing at times, especially if you're a fan. It really can be grueling and shatters some illusions. Yeah, man, it's real and it's raw and it's all out there, and amazing that he wanted that done too.
It's totally amazing. I don't want that done.
No, God, no.
I want to just drift off into obscurity.
Yeah, you know? That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it is. It's amazing. It's super brave, I think, in a way, you know, and it's not at all a celebrity.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What they would want. They want a certain story told, and I guess he didn't want that at all. But I think, Hunter, as you've indicated, it's totally within his character, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's sort of like I come back to him shooting the cover photo from Excitable Boy between the eyes. It's like,
because
that wasn't him.
Yeah.
I mean, he also thought it made him look fat. Like, it wasn't him. It was sort of this image that had been created. And if you think about it, Excitable Boy, compared to the first record, the songs aren't even really him. And so I think he just wanted, you know, he went for it and it totally paid off for his career. But I think he never sort of made peace with the idea that like he was being made out to be something other than what he was.
Right. Mm. All right. Any last thoughts on Warren Zevon?
I mean, look, if you've made it this far in the week, you've listened to me prattle on about it. And I apologize for going on so long. But if nothing else, if you're not familiar with these records, go out and listen to them. Yeah. They're so great. Just listen to the records. They're amazing.
And it's one of those stories, one of those lives lived that's in some ways extremely fascinating in the sense of you could almost, you know, kind of like Zevon, you could write a song about the way he lived his life and everything that happened. It's just a fascinating figure and just a very unique and special talent for all the artists that are out there that we love. You can't really think of anybody really that is comparable to him or like him right. that much. And that, I think there's a lot to be said for that too.
Yeah. And his influence is so sort of widespread. Like, you know that band, the Soft Pack?
Yeah.
I remember they played Letterman and they were like, this song's for Warren Zevon.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think that the Soft Pack would be Warren Zevon fans.
Right.
But they are.
And I think, too, I was doing a little research this morning and over the past couple of days, and I didn't know this, but in 2002, I guess it was Dylan started, you know, Warren Zevon was at a show in California, and Dylan played 3 Warren Zevon songs and went on to keep those in his set. Mutineer, one that he played many times in his set. So there you go right there when that happens. You know, if Dylan deems your music good enough to play himself, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I should also mention before we leave, because I think we're only at 30 minutes on this episode, but Warren Zevon's son, Jordan, who is, I think, sort of in charge of keeping the catalog alive and stuff. There was a great sort of archival release of sort of interesting snippets. I forget what it was called, but it came out around the same time as the book. And that's definitely worth checking out. But Jordan Zevon is a musician in his own right and put out a solo record that's really cool. It doesn't really sound all that much like Warren Zevon to my ears anyway. There's a song, I think it's called The Joke's on Me, that reminds me of XTC, actually.
Oh, kinda.
And it's cool, but that's totally worth checking out as well.
All right, cool. All right, well, this has been a great week.
Unbelievably great, yeah. And of course, we would be remiss if we didn't say, you know, take away from all this, not only the great music of Zevon, but to treasure every moment and enjoy every sandwich.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is something that he said that was awesome.
What was the story about that again? That was like when asked if what he had learned from life or the experience or enjoy every sandwich. Yeah.
There you go.
Sage words.
Okay. Well, if the listeners have any thoughts or feelings on the work of Warren Zevon, we would love to hear it. We can do a follow-up at some point. The best thing to do probably is call, leave a message. Mm-hmm. That number is
612-440-1984.
There you go.
But what do they do if they don't have a phone?
Well, one thing you can do first is you can email.
Right.
Right? And
you can.
Right. So you can type and you can email to rock@suburbspod.com. Another thing people like to do lately is record audio message like on like voice memo or that kind of thing and email that to us. A lot of people enjoy that because it sounds a little bit better and they can also like delete if they say something they didn't want to say.
That's right.
Get it right and then send it to us. Also, you can go to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Suburbs Pod, and you can leave messages there. But I know what you're getting at, Hunter, is that one thing that's become really popular with the show is people just open up the window and yell.
Right? Or if you're already outside, just start yelling.
That's right. If anyone can hear you over the sound of the cicadas, have you noticed in D.C.? Are they really loud? They're really loud here in Virginia.
I haven't noticed the cicadas. I'm trying to think. I haven't really noticed anything. It's
I think I'm just hyper aware. I think they may not be any louder, but maybe it's just because I'm home all the time that I'm just like more aware of things like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And once again, Hunter, I know we mentioned it earlier in the week, but just really quick, tell people if they've made it all the way and they're drinking up every last drop of this Zevon week, how do people get in touch with you? If they want to thank you or offer comments or learn more about some of the other stuff you've done.
Well, they can look me up on Facebook where my name is capital H period lowercase X Bennett. That's B-E-N-N-E-T-T. Mm-hmm. Or they can email me at my personal email account, which is Hunter Bennett, HUNTERBENNETT 2000. That's 2000 at yahoo.com. I'm told that only old people have Yahoo email addresses, but I
do.
Stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the way to go. Yeah.
Not AOL.
Or from time to time, people email me at work. You would not offend me if you do that, but I think I might offend my employer if I were to give out my work email address. So if you do a little looking around on the internet, you could find that email address. So anyway, before we say goodbye, thank you guys so much for having me on the show. I
thank
always
you.
Love coming on, and you have both done such a great job of creating a really cool community of listeners. And Jim and Patrick may not mention this on the show, but they run a Friday night hootenanny. That's actually very fun. And the listeners get together and play music and talk and cheer each other on. And I would totally attend if I did not fall asleep at like 7 o'clock on Friday nights.
But really, the thanks are totally for you, Hunter. I mean, this outline, this topic, thoughtfulness, and the passion you have for Zevon really came through. And we thank you so much. And our door is always open anytime you want to come on the show.
All right. Well, thanks. I will definitely take you up on that.
Excellent.
Probably not for a while, though. I'm a little worn out.
Yeah. Just, you know, keep us in your heart for a while.
All right. I will.
Think of us when you're around the house.
That's right. All right. This has been great. This has really been great. And we don't do these deep dives enough. So it's always a joy to us when we get to do it.
I'm excited for the third Flying Nun week, which has got to be coming up soon.
That's right.
It's big. Yeah. We're trying to line up sponsors for that, you know, because it's gotten so huge. Flying Nun week.
Sell through. Yeah.
Yeah. I mentioned all the places you can contact us. Also go to suburbspod.com where you can find past episodes. There's got to be something that you would enjoy if you're new to the show. And then also you can sign up for our newsletter there. Just click on newsletter and sign up. And that's where you get the link to the Friday Night Hootenanny.
That's right.
And hopefully maybe this week of episodes will inspire some of those participants to play some Zevon songs. Wouldn't that be cool?
Right. Mm-hmm. Be great.
That would be awesome. I might even be able to stay up and listen.
All right. We'll let you know. We'll try to plan
a
particular week.
Lawyers, Guns, and Money once.
You did. That's right. I requested that. That's all coming back to me now.
Yeah.
That was good. You may have to bring that back. We'll have to do a special Zevon edition.
Oh, that'd be great.
Of the Friday Night Hootenanny. Okay. All right. Let's get out of here. Thanks again, Hunter. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been
Hunter Bennett.
All right. And we'll talk to all you all later.
You're my witness. I'm your mutineer. Used to be, we laughed at shadows. Lightning flashed and thunder followed. It could never find us here. You're my witness, I'm your mutineer.
I didn't want to insult dentists by saying an actual doctor.
They're not doctors.
Because they are.